Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and with all these reports coming out in the agricultural world, I had to call my expert, the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator. What's up, Angie?
Not a whole lot. Just sitting here watching paint dry ahead of the report, since not much is happening while we wait for the USDA numbers on Friday. I hate Friday reports. You spend all week waiting for them, and you get to trade them for about an hour and a half. But, so that's about it. Just waiting for them to release the hounds.
All right. Well, okay, before we even discuss about the hounds and what they're going to release, what are you a little, you know, we've talked and we were both kind of bullish, corn and wheat and, you know, soybeans kind of, you know, And soybeans have been kind of but corn and wheat have been a little bit weaker than I would have hoped and would have liked to have seen. Do you have any concern in those products right now?
No, it doesn't concern me. They're weaker than I'd like to see. But at the same time, going into the report that we're going into on Friday, which both you and I have agreed in the past that we're not real big fans of USDA numbers anyway, but the market trades them, you know, so we have to be aware of the impact the report can have. So going into Friday and the numbers that the USDA is going to release, I would rather be on the low end of the recent trade than on the high end, because then that way we can really weather if there is a bad number in there, because has it already been baked in sort of thought process, stuff like that. So I would rather be able to be talking about 395 July corn or something like that. But at the same time, to say I'm surprised about us being on the downside going into Friday after the last couple years of bearish surprises, I'm not, you know.
Well, you know, I mean, now, I am a huge believer that the markets are never surprised by the news anymore, because I believe that if you're smart and you're, you know, a big firm, you can have these numbers before they have them, because they're not that hard to compile. If you know what to look for and you know how to put them together, they're basically published, you know, little times during the week. You know, it's kind of like, you know, you get the every week you get the update, you get this. If you put the numbers together, you're basically going to come up with the report. So I believe that the numbers are really meaningless overall. They might create a stir for a moment, but typically they'll trap you on the wrong side. What do you think?
Oh, I agree. I mean, when it comes to supply and demand numbers and quarterly stock numbers, you're basically right in line. The hardest part with the acreage guess and the quarterly stock numbers is the USDA has the final say in fudging them. You know what I mean? So the USDA, everything could point in one direction. You could talk to every farmer in the country and he'd tell you one thing, and you could compile up what you think and use science to put stuff together. But you could go into this and the USDA, you know, could determine something entirely different than what is anticipated. But every other report, you know, I agree with completely. And for the most part, yeah, I think a lot of times market trend gives you an indication of what to expect going into a report. But this one's always a special kind of wild card. I hate this one the most out of all of the reports that are released every year.
Do you really? And why do you hate this one the most?
Because it's intended acreage. So it's the USDA goes out and they survey a certain percentage of people, and they use the economic factors and they do all of these things. And so before, really, planters have turned a wheel and 80%, well, in any of the Corn Belt, and 80% of the countryside, really, you're seeing numbers released that are very open to change. So if weather is different or if prices shift or something like that, well, farmers have you know, have intentions locked in, they may have their seed ordered and stuff like that, they can always trade that in up until the final date and switch. And, you know, so it's just a really wide open number that's released this week.
Now, I'm a big believer that the USDA reports are all BS, and they are virtually worthless and not worth the paper or the computer they're printed on. What do you say?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to argue that. I think they give the market a direction, but I think the actual cash market tells you more about what's going on in the supply and demand setup than anything. I mean, it gives us a number that we can trade off from, but the reality is no one could actually verify whether or not it's accurate. You know, it's kind of like you trust and you take what you see in market trends. And then when I say market, I'm talking the physical cash market. You know, what basis does, which basis is a function of local supply and demand and tends to trump futures, you know, what spreads do and spreads is a function of supply and demand as well. You know, so you see basis and spreads give you more of an indication on whether or not there's an oversupply of a commodity. But, you know, the USDA, I guess, quantifies that or puts a number to it to make people feel better about what's going on. And they're almost a necessary evil just because we need, you know, we need borders, or it's like a fence. It keeps us from going out into the weeds, and with the market hating uncertainty, the traders have kind of chosen this as their level of certainty, just because everything else would be a little bit harder to get their arms around, I think.
Yeah, but again, I say that they don't mean anything. And if I remember correctly, last year, the same report that came out last year, and I happened to have been in the airport in New York, and I was talking to a few of the guys, and I said, okay, I'm just putting in orders below because I'm buying them. I don't care what the report says. I'm a buyer. Yeah. I'm a buyer, and I'm hoping that they puke on them so I can get them cheaper. Of course, that was basically the bottom of the year, and I'm almost looking for almost an instant replay. What do you think?
I'm expecting the same thing. I just put an article together last week on how even at 93 million acres, so the market's expecting 90 million acres of corn, or the pre-report estimate is around 90 million acres of corn planting intentions. You know, 3 million acres of corn at 170 bushels to the acre can make a big swing in ending stock expectations. And I argued a week ago that you could see 93 million acres of corn, and it still wouldn't be bearish the market because there's so many other factors that we're going to pay closer attention to after this number is released.
And you know, I agree. No, go ahead. Finish your thought. I'm sorry. Go.
No. That's really where I'm at. Is once the number is released, it gives us bones to the skeleton of building your new crop expectations, but it really isn't. I mean, we don't know where they go together. It's a pile of bones, I guess.
It's a pile of cow dung.
Yeah. Well, that too. That's what it is. I mean, it's really, it's a number that will trade for a flash, and then everyone's going to start to pay attention to weather.
Right. And that's the big thing that we want to, when we come back from the break, I want to talk about that, because this is something that I personally believe that many farmers and producers make the mistake of trading. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator. You catch her on the Bubba Show about every other week, and make sure that you check her out. And if you miss her, you go to libertytalk.fm and you can download the show, the Bubba Show, every day, as well as the Sporting Edge on the weekends. And of course, my brand new, soon to be Emmy Award winning Bubba's Bottom Line, available at BubbaTrading.com. Don't miss that, because as you know, I like to fire it up, and there you get to see my red face and then my blood pressure medicines. That's how you see it. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer. We'll be back right after the break with more the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz coming right back to you after the break. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator, but also the goddess. And she is a goddess. Sometimes a little bit, you know, whatever, but she's a goddess. And anyways, goddess. So I believe that farmers and producers pay way too much attention to these reports and get way too hepped up either one side or the other when really the report has no immediate effect on them whatsoever. And the markets will play themselves out over time regardless. What say you?
Oh, I agree. I mean, my advice this week to everyone on Twitter has been to step away from the screen. You know, there has been trend changing numbers that have come out in USDA reports, but those are most typically June 30th or September 30th, because those are they give you an updated idea as to what's really, quote unquote, I'm using air quotes, what's really happening out there. You know, so the March report is really one where it's a speed bump. You know, it may change directions in the short term, but like you said, long term wise, the market will play out the way it is. The only reason that you would ever really want to get upset about a report like this is if you're going into it completely unprotected and you know that the prices are good enough to that you should be selling. You know what I mean? Like, so if you know you can make profit on 975 soybeans as a farmer and you have zero bushels sold and you're worried going into a report, then maybe you should sell some. Yeah, it's off the high pretty substantially, but that's no one's fault but your own. You know, if you're going to let the market drop 65 cents or give up 65 cents worth of profit, you know, and then panic ahead of a report, that's your own fault for not having a plan in place, you know, 3-4 weeks ago. Sorry to sound so rough about it, but it's true. Other than that, to go into this thing doing anything other than kind of just closing your eyes and waiting for the dust to settle mid next week sometime, you know, I think as a farmer, you probably are doing it wrong.
Well, I mean, that's something you just said that was very important. And again, if you're running your proper marketing plan ahead of time, then this report is also meaningless for you. It can only be advantageous to you if you've overhedged and it goes down, or you've underhedged and it goes up. But if you're hedged properly and you've already taken the steps, then you're in pretty good shape and the number should mean absolutely zero. What do you say about that?
Exactly. Yes. I mean, I have guys that will still have corn bushels to sell after this report comes out. We're not hedging. You know, we've hedged a portion of bushels when these futures got up to $4. They've purchased crop insurance, which is a basic put against their crop on, depending on their production history, a certain chunk of bushels at $3.96. And the rest of it, we're going to leave up to God, Mother Nature, and the markets. You know what I mean? And so they don't care. We're going into this report. They're 50% hedged on soybeans, like I'd like them to be, you know, above $10 futures on everything. So they're comfortable there. If the market decides to rally, they'll sell the last half of their crop at a much higher value. If it falls apart, they still have a high average and they have revenue protection either in a form of an option or through crop insurance. So the bean number doesn't scare them at all. It doesn't matter. And the only thing that a lot of my guys right now are open on is wheat. And that's just because it's been so hard to find there hasn't been profitable levels other than last June, you know, for wheat sales at this point. So a lot of guys were waiting to see what happens there. And that's the only thing we could be concerned about. But really right now, I don't see anything negative coming in for wheat in this week's number at all. Like we already know the worst is, we know what to expect from the worst case scenario already with wheat.
I'm still telling, I'm calling wheat still going over $5 this year. That's still my prediction.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not giving up. I'm still long.
I agree 100%. Yeah, I do. And that's what I've been telling guys right now is that's why I'm not so worried about them not having wheat sold, is because I think they'll get an opportunity in the next 3 months.
And I mean, I just, you know, again, I'm and I will be working orders to buy. I'll be buying, trying to buy everything if they wax it. I mean, I don't see it. And I look ahead from my standpoint and I say, you know, for the last 3 years, it's been every bit of news that has come out has been very negative. The farmer, the producer, stronger dollar, higher fuel costs. They have not had one good news, bit of good news, in my opinion, and still been able to basically survive, except for the ones that tried to, you know, over gamble or over speculate on certain things. Because, of course, as we all remember, last July 4th weekend was the top of the markets, and it was everybody was piling in because they could never go down. And the weatherman's always right, right? So,
the weatherman always wins.
I mean, but at the end of the day, I mean, you know, now if you do it right, so I believe that, you know, we're going to have. First of all, I think we're going to have a much lower dollar this year. That would be the first thing that would be my indication that we're going to have a good year, because I think the dollar is going into the low 90s at least. And, you know, obviously I've been calling for that since it was 104, and I continue to see it work lower. You have any thoughts on the dollar?
Yeah, I agree. I think the dollar decides to work lower. I think overall, I think that trade was too heavy. You know, I think of course, there were some ebbs and flows and some peaks and super good, you know, opportunities out there to short it. But I don't see why anyone else would pile in much. And, there's just so much uncertainty right now with what's going to happen economically speaking. And you can only play the best house in a bad neighborhood trade for so long, I think. That's my opinion on it.
No, I'm in agreement with you. And this is one of the things I think was the big tip off was, you know, 2 weeks ago, when the Fed did what they were going to do, and, you know, everybody had, and this is something that you have to learn for every product, but we'll start with this. So that everybody had priced in, we knew they were going to raise rates, and that should have meant a stronger dollar, but they had overpriced it to begin with. And once you do that, the subsequent selling in any product becomes much heavier, because now everybody's trying to get out and they're trying to figure out a way out. And I think that happens in all markets. What do you think?
Oh, I agree. I mean, that's what I don't think. I mean, I'm a commodity trader only, or grain trader only, I guess you could say. But I don't think that's the only market you buy the rumor and sell the fact in. And so I think it was pretty obvious going into that. I mean, what was going to be a bullish to the dollar surprise? A half a point increase, three quarters? I mean, we knew it was going to be a quarter point. The likelihood going into it was 100%. You know, the only thing that would have been surprising is had it been a much larger than anticipated increase, or they did nothing. I mean, you can't expect the market to continue to trade with excitement on something that happens that everyone was anticipating.
Right. I mean, I always go with the example, you know, somebody tells you how great a restaurant is or how great a movie is, and you get so pumped up and you go, okay, well, it was okay. I mean, you know, what do you want me to do? Want me to get excited? It wasn't that exciting, right? It wasn't that good, because I had such high expectations. And that is one of the biggest things that happens in markets, is our expectations are built either so low or so high that we end up in the same position, and you go, okay, so here it is. But now,
well, and the reality is there's only a small percentage of people willing to take a risk ahead of an unknown. You know, once something is known, that's usually when people pile in. You know, the majority of the public is generally, once you're feeling exceptionally confident about something as a whole, and that'll be when the general public puts their bets in line. And the general public is mostly afraid of risk. So that's when you see the bulk of that money or any of that, you know, that's when you see that move in is generally once everything's known for sure. And then the opposite effect happens once we're at the, you know, the peak of whatever market move it is.
No, I agree. I mean, again, you and I kind of think alike with these things. And I think that when you start to try to over assume or over manage these markets, and that's the other problem, is that you have to learn to watch the money flow and not the report flow, because the reports are really not that important because of what's going on. And when you look at commercial banks and things like that, they kind of give you the indications. And we're going to talk about this when we come back from the break, because this is another thing, you know, everybody talks about, well, where are the commercials standing? Well, you know, I heard somebody say the other day, the commercials are all long. Well, I happen to know that the bank commercials are massively short. So I guess those positions kind of watch out. We'll talk about when we come back from the break. We are with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator. You can get the show every day. You download it at libertytalk.fm, The Bubba Show, or The Sporting Edge on the weekends. And of course, Bubba's Bottom Line, available for you at BubbaTrading.com. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back after the break with more from the goddess herself, The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz coming right back.
Welcome
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Hear that whistle, it's 10 o'clock.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator, also the goddess. And it's at the goddess of grains on Twitter. You got to check her out on Twitter and get all her insight information. So, Angie, you know, I think that, you know, a lot of the anticipation that's built in, and we hear about the commitment of traders report. And unfortunately, I think most people have a tendency to read a report and then put it into their own interpretation. And make it, like, if I want to be bearish, I make it bearish. But I happen to know, you know, I've heard many, many times that, you know, the big commercial funds are all massively long. But I happen to know for a fact that all the commercial banks are massively short the grain markets and some of the markets. So who's right? Is it right? And what's your take of all that stuff?
Well, the one thing that's important to point out, you know, in the commitment of traders for some folks, what a lot of folks don't recognize is a good portion of the commercial reports, or the commercial contracts reported, are folks like me. So if I'm buying from the farmer, I'm shorting the board because I'm owning the physical, and to offset my physical risk, I'm going to short the board to do so. And so if you see a lot of commercials short, in that respect, there's a lot of farmer ownership that's been given up. You know, a lot of bushels have been transferred from the hands of the farmer to the hands of the end user, or the elevator that's going to hold them and bridge it in the middle, whereas the non-commercials are your speculators and things like that. But, yeah, I mean, you're right. The big banks are short. All of these people are short. You know, if you see the commercials go long, on that side, the commercial elevator going long, that means he's sold the grain to the end user, but he doesn't have it owned by the farmer yet. So he's either selling inventory or making a big trade on the expected, you know, idea that inventory's coming his way. So a lot of people watch that or watch those reports, but they don't. I've seen a lot of people not necessarily understand the commercial versus non-commercial aspect of what those numbers might mean. And you know, I'm not going to lie. I pay attention to it from a trend standpoint, but I don't pay attention to it from a, you know, what does this mean for market moves? If we are record long non-commercial and the market's rallied 80 cents, I'm going to question whether that trend continues and take a look at what's going on with open interest. But aside from that, you know, like in this market setup, I don't pay too awful much attention to it just because of the trend that's already known, which is the market. We're in a bear market, flat out. I mean, that's where we're at right now until something changes, I think, significantly supply-wise.
Right. And so, you know, now we've seen in the livestock markets, you know, I think the cattle's have been in a cash squeeze, and I think it's been squeezing the entire market, and I think that's going to fail pretty poorly, as did the hog markets when they had the February April squeeze. What are your thoughts? You have any thoughts there?
Yeah, I think you're seeing some of the same things. I think had the Brazilian meat ban in China and the other countries stayed in place, and we started to see a shift in export interest, then you were probably going to see a long-term uptrend develop in live cattle, just because the packers were pushing. You were seeing kind of this inventory squeeze. You were seeing some people run up and deliver cattle a little earlier because you were seeing some lighter weights come in. But the reality is from what I've understood, and I'm not a huge cattle trader on that side, but from what I've understood, there's going to be a lot of times where your packers or your buyers of the end product, the actual cow on hoof, will come out and really, really push, and then they'll just back away for 2 weeks. So they'll cover their needs for slaughter for the next couple of weeks, and then they back away, you know, maybe even go no bid, and it absolutely kills the cash price. And the cash price paid by a packer to a farmer or a rancher, you know, tends to generally indicate what the market needs to do. And cash prices have been exceptionally strong these last couple of weeks, even without the Brazilian issue, and now suddenly you're starting to see them back away. So I think, you know, you'll kind of get a bit of a double whammy, as in we still have a solid feeder supply, you know, that'll translate into solid fats if the packers slow down a little bit on buying, and you probably will see some sellers come in. You know, hopefully it's you know, farmers and ranchers with cattle that are taking advantage of some of the recent run-up and hedging more so than anything. So they're shorting the market, therefore pressuring it to move lower. But I do anticipate the cattle market to probably, you know, if it fails at testing some new highs like it has been trying to do this week, I think it'll probably fall back to some more recent lows, just because we still have a good supply, and with Brazil still in the market, where we're at.
Well, I think they got, you know, one of the things I always look at, and this goes back to what we talked about a little earlier, is, you know, when they puked on them in November, October, they took them down way too far. And of course, yeah, you know, there was a lot of forced liquidation and all those things were going on with the banks and the lending power. And I think they way overbought them here. And I think I personally think that we've got probably 8 to 10% sell-off coming in both fats and feeders before we would see a rally. Now, again, I do expect higher prices towards the end of the year, but if you look at the formations, especially in fat cattle, I mean, you've got April at 121 and you've got August at 106. I mean, that is not a real bullish formation. What do you think?
No. Generally, a market inverse suggests, you know, well, you know it, but a market inverse suggests that we need the supply on the front half. And you've seen feeders, you know, remain generally weak. You know, there's a translation or a correlation, or there tends to be, in your feeder fat spread. You know, and feeders, well, fats were rallying last week, or live cattle were rallying last week. You know, you didn't see feeders excited about it, which tells me, you know, all you had to look at was heifer retention over the last year to see that the available supply of calves is going to be large this year. You know, so your feeder supply is going to be relatively decent. And that most people, if you look at that inverse coupled with what's going on with feeders, most folks are expecting to have plenty of supply come fall.
I would agree with that. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, I think we have very short memories. And we try to, we're long memories, but we try to remember that, you know, feeders were 240 a couple of years ago. And like, well, you think they're going to go back there? And I would say that was pretty much an anomaly. And we're not going to see that. You know, it happens once in a blue moon. And but I don't see that happening. And I think that's what happens. You get too many people trying to speculate up and, of course, pushing prices to the limits. And of course, once that happens, usually what happens when all the buyers are in or all the sellers are in, what usually happens?
you usually fall apart. And the one thing too with cattle that's different than grains is you don't have the ability to put them in a bin. You know what I mean? You can't just keep feeding the steer until he weighs 2,500 pounds and his meat is no good. You've got to bring them to market when they're ready. And the same said for a feeder. You can't keep a feeder, you know, at 500 pounds or whatever they're selling them at. You know, you can't just be like, well, I'm going to sit on my feeders for the next 3 months and see what happens with the market. You've got to bring them into market. And that's the problem with any of your meat markets, your proteins, you know, whether it's a poultry based hogs or cattle, is you can't keep the supply sitting sedentary somewhere. You know, it's always got to move in. So the only way that you can remove supply out of the market, of course, is to kill and eat them. Freeze them, and you can do that, but it's not going to save. I mean, that's going to help your packer with frozen supply, not your farmer with with cattle on hook, you know.
Can't we put them under in a cryogenics machine and freeze them at the weight they're at for a couple of years and store them like we do grains? Come on.
You can come up with that, you're going to be an even richer man than you already are.
I mean, it's really a tragedy that, you know, that is the difference between, you know, hedging different products. And of course, you know, in the grains, you can hold them for a while. You can store them for a while. You know, as long as your cost of store isn't too much, you can, you know, kind of sit on it and kind of wait for that better move. And in cattle, you can't, you got to get rid of them. And you got to, and unfortunately, you know, you have all these other costs that go along with them. And, you know, those, you're very dependent on those. Do you hedge feed costs for anybody?
Feed? Yeah, I haven't. I don't in this capacity anymore, but in my past life, I was a feed sales lady. I did sell feed. So.
Oh, all right. Yeah, no, because I mean, it just, you know, obviously, you know, pretty soon, I think we're going to get into a position where they need to hedge fuel costs. You know, when we get oil, I think, which is going to get down into the low 40s, I'd be looking to lock in my fuel cost. And, you know, obviously, if you're feeding animals, I mean, this is probably a fairly good time before the report that I'd be looking to probably hedge some feed costs going forward. I mean, just a lot of things, you know, that can be done. And of course, you know, every dime you can save on your input is going to save you money on the output later. And, you know, that's kind of where the airlines finally learned after all those years of going bankrupt that if they actually just hedged their costs and knew what their seat cost was, they wouldn't go broke every year. And, of course, they are starting to be a little bit more successful now for those very reasons. But that's why we have the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator, also the goddess at the Goddess of Grains on Twitter. You got to check her out. She's got some great posts and is always trying to educate as well as help farmers and producers as well. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz, and of course, LibertyTalk.fm is where you can download The Bubba Show every single day, and we have also 24-hour-a-day content there, and there's also the Sporting Edge available there, which they're getting some big guests there now that Xander's taking over their show. In the meantime, this is The Bubba Show. We are with Angie Setzer. We're going to step out here for a break. We'll be right back with more after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz, coming right back. Show Todd Bubba Horwitz with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. All right, Angie, we've kind of talked about, we've twiddled around the reports, we've kind of done back and forth, and all right, so now let's hear the report before it comes out. I want the numbers from you and where we're going from there. Let's hear your views and thoughts.
Well, I'm expecting 88 million acres of soybeans. So a little bit less or right around what most everyone's anticipating. I think soy probably, depending on what quarterly stocks say, which is the main wild card, but I wouldn't be surprised with soybeans if they weren't larger than anticipated. So I think we probably end up testing the 950 range on November soybeans, but really kind of stick around that. I don't really see us moving substantially lower without some other type of surprise. So I'm just kind of, I think traders will wait, make sure the Brazilian crop starts flowing into the pipeline before we take it down another leg from that 950. And then on corn, I'm actually anticipating around 92.5 million acres of corn planting expectations, and hoping quarterly stocks are lower than anticipated a little bit. So I think the market may react kind of mixed on Friday, maybe test some, you know, the 350, something like that, but end up trading higher in the long term and give us another shot at $4 plus December futures, even before Mother's Day.
All right. So all right. Well, okay. And then what about wheat?
Wheat. I think wheat tends to trade a little bit with corn. Right now there's the rain, you know, you got the rain falling in the areas that really needed it, but at the same time, the crop conditions kind of continue to drop a little bit here or there. I'm waiting to see if we get a freeze in the forecast. A freeze in the forecast would cause a quick run up. Without a freeze in the forecast, I think we just kind of follow corn's pattern, maybe meander for a little bit and probably test the recent highs, you know, that 465 on the May. I think we test that again with corn, you know, prior to Mother's Day.
All right. Now, are you a net buyer or a net seller in your opinion? What would you like? What prices would you like to see print on Friday, and what prices would you like to be either a buyer or a seller at?
I'm a buyer at 348 May corn, hands down, probably 350. I'd probably jump a couple cents on the May, 350. I'm a seller of $10 November soybean, and I am a buyer of really right here at this price, this wheat price. I mean, maybe you got risk to 410, 408 on the May, but I think you could own it at the 420 something and feel happy.
Okay. Well, you're always happy though, but I'm going to work right now as it looks today. I'm going to work orders to buy corn at 340. I'm going to work to buy soybeans at 415, and I'm going to put to buy beans in at 940. All right. I'm going to work 940. Okay. I'm going to put those in on Friday morning. And I'm going to leave men right to the report and hope that I get filled and hope that I don't have to chase them up a little bit. And I don't mean chase them up higher because I wouldn't chase them up higher, but hope they come down and get me and hope that that the sellers have been oversold here and they're going to take one more chance to push them down and try to break them, because I think that is one of the problems, is the aggression here to the downside has been, you know, fairly heavy, basically, because we were really at really great levels and we broke down through some key levels, I think. And so I think we see an overall bounce off the number. But I think the first reaction is down. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think we trade lower, you know, without some sort of bullish surprise. A bullish surprise in corn would be sub 90 million acres. You know, if acreage comes in at 88 million on corn, which God forbid, because that would mean there's a hell of a lot of soybeans out there. If it comes in below that, then I think corn's number knee-jerk reaction limit higher, which nowadays limits, what, 20 cents? So it's not really a huge deal versus when it could move 40-some cents in a day. But, you know, in a bullish surprise in beans, I think would have to be below 86 million. And then that would be really negative for corn. So the hard part is whatever's going to be positive for one is going to be negative for the other, really. And they'll drag each other. But without a bullish surprise, yeah, I think your first move is going to be lower just because people are going to come in and try to sell it.
That's, of course, unless they split the difference, right?
Exactly. But we come in completely boring and just sit here for the next 6 weeks.
Well, but don't, I mean, I think we're going to move. I think, now here's my, I think that they've priced in the numbers. I mean, negative across the board, basically. How they figured that out, I don't know. But it seems like they priced it negative across the board. Just look at the price action. And I don't really care about the report. I mean, I won't even look at it, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, what I'll do is Friday afternoon is I'll call somebody up and I'll say, what was it? Tell me what it looked like to you. But I'm already working my orders. I don't care because, again, I'm going to play the price action. And will you work anything from like way on the upside in case it does go right up? Or will you just only look to be a buyer on the downside and let the upside take care of itself?
So I've got customers that do have orders in that 385, you know, the recent highs, but they'd have those in whether the report was coming out or not. You know what I mean? We've gotten they've had to sell some stuff to get some bills paid, and we moved it basis only, so we're still waiting to apply futures, and so we have some standing sell orders. But those, like I said, are simply because they're a good spot to sell for a farmer from a profitability standpoint more than anything else. You know, we may have some guys that put in some orders to own some calls or something like that. But aside from that, we'll just kind of go in. And the no-brainer to me is the buy side, you know, the low end. And so that's why it's like, okay, well, I would buy, you know, in that 348 range on the May and 408 on the May wheat. You know, just because that, to me, I'm long-term optimistic or long-term think we see an uptrend develop in corn and wheat, so it's easier for me to say when I, you know, where I think the bottom price is coming in here in the next couple of weeks.
Okay, so you know now you've got your thing. Now, do you have any advice for farmers and producers out there? Things that they should be worried about, things that they should be looking for, and not just about the report, but just in general. What would be the Angie Setzer things to worry about or think about going into, you know, I guess planting season starting at some places? Have they started anywhere yet?
Yeah, Texas mainly.
And then
Texas is not the only place. Yeah, Louisiana, you know, a few places like that. The very, very, very south part. Now, there are people that just posted that they started planting yesterday in southwestern Indiana. So that's a bit of a surprise, but they just posted that on Twitter that they're rolling. So I guess there have been some planters rolling in some spots.
So what would be your advice to the farmer and producer today as to what they should be doing and how they should be doing it?
Well, to remember right now, because everyone's getting hopped up about all the rain, and while that is beneficial if we do see some plant delays develop, to remember that a lot of times people see rain as making grain until we discover there's a different reason for that. You know, so we've got about a month before we need to even be thinking about it. And the fact remains that you see some of the size of equipment out here in the Corn Belt, and you know that the crop gets planted with a few days of reasonable weather. But the main thing I'm paying attention to is what we could see develop from an inflationary standpoint. You know, if the outside markets start to take a dip or continue to take a dip, and we see people looking to place their bets elsewhere, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see a bit of a pop in grains, especially if we could get some sort of weather story developing. But the main thing I'm watching right now, because they're in the middle of their production season, really, is what's going on with the Brazilian corn. And that's our wild card. I mean, everyone forgets that Brazil's going to be a big competitor, or could be. And you know, if that crop comes in at 90-some million acres, or 90-some million metric ton, excuse me, our corn crop's going to have to take an even bigger cut to it.
Okay, know? Then that's why she is the goddess, the best. Andy Setzer, Goddess of Grains, Vice President, says, Lord, thank you so much. Always great to have you on.
Thank you for having me. I always enjoy it.
This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bob Horowitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station, The Bubba Show, Todd Bob Horowitz. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.